Welcome to Twin Cities Theater Chat. This podcast is created by members of the Twin Cities Theater Bloggers to share our love of theater, promote theater going, and support our theater community. On today's episode, Rob Dunkelberger of The Stages of Minnesota and Jill Schaefer of Cherry and Spoon are speaking with Joseph Hodge, Artistic Director of the Guthrie Theater, about the upcoming History Plays series. For the first time in over 30 years, the Guthrie is performing Richard II, Henry IV, and Henry V with a rotating repertory cast. This epic Shakespeare event runs through May 25th and includes dates where you can binge-watch all three and a number of Shakespeare-related educational events. Find all the info at GuthrieTheater.org.
Joe, thanks for joining us today to talk about the upcoming History Plays at the Guthrie.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
The last time these plays were produced at the Guthrie was the 1990-91 theater season. At the time, you were a member of the acting company. Were you in the cast of those productions?
I was. Very recently finished school, come out of graduate school, and I was in New York City. I actually had come out the season before to do a production of the screens at the Guthrie, and I went back to New York, and then they called and they invited me out for the following season, the whole of it, including the History Plays as a member of the company, which was a hugely important moment in my artistic life.
What roles did you play?
I played Bagot in Richard II, and I played John of Lancaster in the Henry IVs, who becomes Bedford in Henry V.
And have you had other experience with these three plays?
I have. As an actor or director, this is my third Richard II. This is my third Henry IV, and this is my sixth Henry V.
I would assume you're building off of that knowledge. What is it like directing these plays in rep?
They're great, great plays. It's why I enjoy returning to them. And they're really bottomless. You know, you can explore and explore for a lifetime in these plays. And in some ways I have, and not discover all of it. So they're brilliant examinations of themes of family leadership, families we choose, and the ones that we are born into, the terrible cost of war should one choose to wage it. So many extraordinary themes course through these plays, so it makes it a real delight to go back to them. And each of these plays independently are astounding works. They're magnificent, and they stand on their own altogether. But they are, in fact, linked, and to be able to start with a Richard II and carry all the way through Henry V and have those characters, you know, Hal, the young prince in the tavern with Falstaff and all of those folks wanting nothing to do with the crown, watching him move into the crown, taking on the crown, becoming Henry V and becoming the very great leader that he turns out to be. By putting the plays in rep, we just get to have the big, big journey and the big arcs of these characters across these plays in ways that are just thrilling. So we're rehearsing them all together, all at the same time. And indeed, we will open them all on the same day in a marathon performance that will start with Richard II. We'll have a meal break, come back for Henry IV, have a meal break, come back for Henry V, and play through to the end of the evening. And in that season, Rob, that you mentioned, that 1991 season where we did those history plays in rep, on several occasions, we did those marathon days. And for all of us who are part of that, and I mean all of us, meaning the artists involved in the organization, of course, and the audience, for folks who went on that big journey, those marathon journeys, like, people still talk to me about it all the time now, whatever we are, 33, 34 years away from it. So super excited to put us back in rep. And the Guthrie has not been in rotating rep for, I think it's probably 25 years since we last were in a rotating rep. Rotating rep, of course, meaning you have multiple plays and they cycle in and out across any performance week. You know, you can come and see a Richard II on a Tuesday, a Henry IV on a Thursday, and a Henry V on a Saturday. The Guthrie hasn't been in that arrangement for many, many years.
Yeah, I love seeing plays in rep, like at the Great River Shakespeare Festival or some of those things where you see the same company of actors in different stories. This is unique because they're related stories, like you said. But what are the challenges for you as a director and for the actors for performing three plays at the same time?
You know, it's such a great question. The company and I talk about this a great deal. whatever we think prepares us for such a thing is probably not enough. It's a, you know, it's a, we call it a marathon for a reason. And, you know, part of rehearsal, I'm something of a sports fan. And to borrow a sports analogy, I think we play the way we practice. And a lot of the work in rehearsal is building the muscle and the stamina to be able to play all the way across these plays. And indeed, in some cases, in a single day. You know, the delight is there are very few standing acting companies left in this country. There was a time when there were many. And though the Guthrie no longer has a standing company and hasn't had one for many, many years, the ability to have one company of actors for some 5 months together, these 25 actors in rehearsal, coming into a shared understanding of what these productions are to us. You know, there are Shakespeare being Shakespeare, these plays and all his plays in some ways are ink blots. You know, they are what we say that they are, what we decide that they are. So working with a single group of people to determine what are the productions of these plays that we want to make, and then sharing as artists the journey of working together, training together, building together, so that we can get those plays on and speak in a single powerful voice of what we believe these plays to be. So it's a tremendous joy. I mean, obviously, it's a huge lift artistically and organizationally. But now here we are in our third week of rehearsals. And it's just, it's a really joyous room. People who are working very, very hard and very, very well. So it's exciting.
I don't know if you've ever worked with Peter Michael Goetz. He used to be at the Guthrie a lot. I heard him tell a story one time about he was doing, I think it was Of Mice and Men and some Shakespeare play in rep. And for one performance, he came out in his Of Mice and Men costume, and it was the Shakespeare play. So
yeah,
hopefully that's not going to happen. I'm sure you have a lot of things in place to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, that's a funny story, and I've heard it. I've heard that told of Peter, which is a fantastic story. But yeah, you know, it's a lot. You know, actors, most actors today don't have that muscle of working in rep. But as you say, you know, as they do at Great River, and we have a couple of those actors in our company here, and they know how to do this. Steve Yocum, who was in the history plays all those years ago, played Henry Bolingbroke, later to become Henry IV in those plays. So there are people in the room who know it. There are plenty of people in the room who worked in rep before, and there are certainly plenty of folks in the room who know their Shakespeare extremely well and these plays well. And so, you know, we spend a lot of time sort of teaching these plays to one another and coming again to some sort of shared understanding of what it is that we want to pursue.
What's the structure of rehearsal? It sounds like from speaking with people that you begin blocking out one. When you have that down, you're blocking out the next one. Is that the progression? Is that sort of the strategy?
Yeah, the first week was completely around the table, which is to say, you know, sitting down, studying the script. It doesn't make sense to get up on your feet till we all really know like what the words actually mean and what they say. Otherwise, you're going to stall out when you get to staging. So we spent the first week around the table, 2 days each on each of the titles. Then we spent the next week staging Richard II. Huge volume of work to get all of those plays up, all of Richard II up in 6 days in an early staging of it. And I was like, you know, the end of that week, I was looking at, you know, well, Tuesday will come and it'll be the first day of the next week of rehearsal. And there I was staring at page one of Henry IV thinking, oh God, you know, this is a lot. And so, you know, this week we will stage Henry IV and get it up on its feet. And then we'll have the day off on Monday. And then we will come back next Tuesday and we'll get Henry V up on its feet. And by the end of that week in mid-February, we will have them all roughly staged. And then we go back. And that's where we really, really begin the work. You know, the actors are all off book. They're starting to get it all inside of them. It's extraordinary the number of actors who showed up to the first rehearsal of the history plays off book for this work. It's a deeply committed company and deeply skilled. So it's big. It's a really, really heavy lift. And it was very clear to me from many, many, many months ago how prepared we would need to be from a directing standpoint, stage management standpoint, in order to move through these rehearsals as briskly as we're moving through them. So, you know, I storyboarded all of these three plays, every scene. This is what's happening with the scenery. This is where people are coming from. My role here is to create a container, describe the contours of said container, What are the edges of it? This is the production we're making. In other words, determining, describing the sandbox in which we can then all play. And actors bringing their own extraordinary imaginations to the work to help bring the described thing to life. You know, the challenge with Shakespeare plays, because you can do them in so many ways, you know, you end up in these productions where you end up going, wow, that's a fantastic Beatrice and that's a fantastic Benedict. And I wish somebody had introduced them to one another because they're a completely different play. So my job here is to help describe the productions I think we are making. And of course, this, you know, this gets... It's an iterative process and you learn things and you adjust things. But the more we can describe to one another the productions that we are making, the playing style, how we're approaching, how we're moving into it, the greater our chances of success. And actors can move swiftly when they understand what it is they are attaching their brilliance to. And so this is where we are in the process to date.
So let's talk about the plays themselves and the edits. Some people may not realize when companies perform Shakespeare's work, it's not unusual to make cuts to the plays. For instance, you've combined Henry IV parts 1 and 2 into one play. One assumes there have been other cuts. What was your guide and your focus as you made those decisions?
I've never been in a Shakespeare play in my life, and I've never directed a Shakespeare play in my life. And at this point, there have been many of them where there isn't some cutting going on. So it's absolutely... sometimes because the language is such as something that was so specific to its time period, it's completely illegible to us today, no matter how well played, like we can't get it. So sometimes you're trimming for time. Sometimes you're trimming for clarity, which is much more often the case. Every Shakespeare play, everyone, even the ones that are just, you know, that lay out so neatly, like a Romeo and Juliet, for example, or a Midsummer, they're still, you're making cuts, you're making some edits. And of course, you know, these plays are in the public domain. There's a reason we're still making them 400 years after Shakespeare. People can do exactly what they want with them. For me, I trust Shakespeare a whole lot. So I don't do a lot of massive interpolating of scenes, moving something farther back, something in the back, further forward, you know, back forward. I don't do a lot of that. I trust the structures as they exist. So the vast majority of the cuts, edits in Richard II and Henry V are small. They're internal pieces. Some small things. One place there's a long chorus speech and we split that into two and we put them on either side of an English camp. I mean, like there are some things, there's some things that are going on, but mostly they're just small internal edits for the Richard II and Henry V. The much bigger exercise, as you point out, Rob, is the Henry IVs. The Henry IVs were written as independent plays. There's a Henry IV part one, which is a complete play, and there's a Henry IV part two, which is a complete play. You almost never ever see a production of Henry IV Part II as a standalone play. As much of its humor is idiomatic to the Elizabethan time, it's absolutely impenetrable to a contemporary audience. So Henry IV I is a magnificent play and is often done on its own. But we wanted the whole of the journey because we needed Hal, the prince, to become Henry V, and we need to understand how he gets there. So we merged those two plays, and I would say the Henry IV Part I is probably 2/3 of that playing script. And the Henry IV Part II is 1/3 of an evening that is both of these plays together. So by far the most heavily edited of these three plays, and perhaps obviously, the Henry IV is by merging them into one evening.
Yeah, that's really interesting because now you say that. I have seen Part I on its own, but I've never seen a production of Part II. So that's interesting.
And there's some great stuff in Part II. I mean, okay. Some great stuff. So the opportunity to be able to...
Part.
Right. It's Henry IV Part II, only the good parts. So, yeah. You know, you get the banishment of Falstaff. You get these incredible scenes between King Henry and his ne'er-do-well son, Hal. You get the ascension of Hal to the throne. I mean, there's some great stuff in Henry IV too. So yeah, that's pretty great.
So you touched on this a little bit, talking about the universal themes of these plays, but why specifically did you want to do these plays in 2024? And what do you think they have to say specifically to a 2024 audience?
Look, Shakespeare's the finest writer the English language has ever had. Maybe that's a complete sentence, but is certainly the finest writer we have ever had in the English language in terms of the examination of the human condition. There's never been anyone better. There still isn't anyone better. So why the themes of the play is like, because it's an election year. We'll do this Shakespeare play because it's about whatever. Sometimes these are useful exercises, and I've done it many times myself. The themes in these plays are evergreen themes. They really are. They're just themes that societies wrestle with all the time, that individuals wrestle with all the time, that families or groups of people deal with all the time. These themes of a country that is utterly divided, each of them, you know, in their full propagandistic notion of the othering, a king attempting to lead in a very, very divided country. I mean, that's kind of obviously themed to our current political moment, societal moment in this country. But it's not the reason to do the plays. We could have done these plays anytime in the last 30 years, and they would have been just as relevant as they were 34 years ago, or 200 years ago, or 400 years ago. Because in the end, you know, what Shakespeare is charting is a human experience. And so the themes are evergreen. And, you know, I get asked, like, well, you know, why do you like going back to a play like a Henry V, which I've done so many times before? And for me, again, I'm not selling anything here. Just for me as an artist and as a human, like, why do I go back to these plays? It's like, for me, it's like asking, like, why do you go back to the ocean? You've seen it. Well, because the ocean contains mysteries and beauties and things that help us know somehow our world and ourselves better. And it's in these great plays where I find deep, deep satisfaction as an artist returning to, and I think for audiences, these plays remain just tremendously rich and textured in ways that are deeply entertaining and fulfilling.
That sounds great, and I look forward to experiencing. I think Rob and I are both excited to go to the marathon days, but for some people that might be a lot. So what are your recommendations for the audience? Can they see one play? Can they see two of them? Can they see them out of order? How do you recommend they take in this work?
You can see any one play, any one of these plays. You can come and have a completely full and rich experience on any one of these plays. You could see any two of these plays, and I think it would also be its own delight. You could see all three of the plays and see them out of order, and nothing very bad would happen, though you'd be putting together a bit of a jigsaw puzzle in your head. And of course, I think seeing all three and seeing, not necessarily in a marathon, of course, that's certainly not for everybody, though I recommend it. I think seeing them in order will be a great delight. And even, you know, across the however many weeks we're running these productions, you know, if you see a Richard II in 1 week and come back 2 weeks later and see Henry IV and come back a week later and see Henry V, you're going to have a really, really good time, a really good time. And, you know, I think it's doing this big epic storytelling journey. I think it connects to our current cultural moment in some ways. You know, as a field, the theater, capital T theater, has been talking about, no, you know, attention spans aren't what they were. People want a 90-minute something. They want to get out. But like, current culture gives the lie to all of that. People will sit down and binge watch 15 hours of some limited series, and whether that's Game of Thrones or Succession or whatever it might be, people are interested in long-form storytelling. They're interested in sticking around with complex characters over a larger arc. And if you think of Game of Thrones or Succession or Lord of the Rings, they are all built on the architecture of these history plays. All of them are. You know, the ring in Lord of the Rings and the huge ambition and desire for the ring, the thing that will destroy them, is absolutely the themes of these history plays. I don't know if you've seen the art for the history plays, but I just love it so much. It's The Crown as a bear trap. It's people seek the very thing that is going to destroy them. These plays are the urtext for so much of what is in popular entertainment today.
That's fascinating. Jill and I are definitely going to do a marathon day. We're really excited about that. Jill, we know you're in the midst of directing three plays simultaneously, and we appreciate you taking time to talk with us today. We have one final question for you. What is your favorite Shakespeare play and why?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, so how to answer this question? I'm not being coy about it. I swear that I'm not. I think different ones of these plays resonate for me in different ways at different times. But I would say my two favorite plays are, you know, again, like, how are you going to say a play is better than a King Lear or a Hamlet? But you're not asking me which is better. You're asking which is my favorite. I love Pericles because I think it's a way better play than people think that it is. And I love having directed a production that played for 14 months all around the country of a play that nobody ever does. And people think it's far less good than I think the thing actually is. It's a spectacular work. I think a very great play. And I would also say Richard II. You know, all of Shakespeare's history plays, and here we're examining four of those titles, right, with the Henry IVs combined into one evening. He wrote two tetralogies of history plays. This is Richard II, the two Henry IVs, there's Henry V. And then there are the three Henry VIs, Henry VI Part 1, 2, 3, and Richard III, which is the other tetralogy of Shakespeare's plays. All of these other Shakespeare plays, all of these other, minus Richard II, all of these history plays are about men becoming kings. And Richard II is about a king becoming a man. He believes in the divine right. He believes that he's there. He's swollen with his own ego. He's a capricious and sometimes foolish leader. And he has to lose everything to realize that he is only a person. He does the thing that is hardest for any of us to do, which is he comes to know himself. And so the other history plays are grand gestures of ascension. And Richard II goes in the inverse direction. It's also the only play of Shakespeare's written entirely in verse. It's a beautiful, gorgeous examination that I've always just been in love with and very moved by. And I've always been startled that, you know, outside of the English-speaking countries, outside of the UK and America, the most produced play of Shakespeare's is actually Richard II of all those history plays. It's not Henry V, which everybody makes. It's not a Henry IV Part 1, which everybody makes. Not a Richard III, which everybody makes. It's actually Richard II. Those are my highly, highly personal and subjective views.
So I lied. There's one more question for you. Can we assume that you'll be doing another set of histories next year in Rep?
No, no. I think the community would be like, no, I think we did that. So, you know, look, the Guthrie has done a Shakespeare play almost every one of our 61 years. And so, you know, we'll stay in the Shakespeare space because I think we belong there. But, you know, something like this, you know, there's a reason a place like the Guthrie will do it once in every 30 years. These plays together and in the way we're doing them, it'll make it one of the most, if not the most ambitious project in the American theater this year. You can't do this annually. You can't. It takes years of prep and planning and finding sufficient resource to be able to do it. So I am thrilled that we are. And in a moment where the theaters nationwide are really struggling a great deal in any number of ways. I know that you all, you know, you read the articles, you know what's happening around the country. And I thought, you know, it's important for the Guthrie to plant a flag here. The Guthrie, we need to remind ourselves what we're capable of, but we also need to remind the field what it is that we're capable of. So it's exciting to swing for the fences with this big, big production. And I'm loving the process of it all together and trying to get us there.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I think you've given us a lot of really great insight, and I'm even more excited about this epic event. So
thank you, really friends. And I love that you're coming to a marathon. It makes me so happy.
Yeah,
thank you
I
for
love
that.
It. Yeah, I may need to drink some coffee to stay awake for that last
part. You probably will.
Our thanks to Joe Hodge for joining us on Twin Cities Theater Chat. The history plays run through May 25th at the Guthrie Theater. More information can be found on their website at guthrietheater.org. Stay tuned for more interviews and info about the history plays on future episodes of Twin Cities Theater Chat. And thank you for listening to Twin Cities Theater Chat. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform, rate and review us, and spread the word. Follow the Twin Cities Theater bloggers on Facebook and Instagram to read our reviews and find out what we're up to. And go see a show, or three.